Good morning, and welcome to the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Rick Jay, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Cary, North Carolina. Today is Monday, May 12, 2025. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the chapter Working with Others on page 96, the third paragraph beginning with, "He may be broke and homeless." And we will be reading and commenting on that one paragraph ending with, "rather than his recovery," at the top of page 97. Today's readers are Christina L., the 12 steps, Sharla W., the 12 traditions. Our big book readers are Ashley F., reading the text, Tamara C. is on page 164, and Marge O. is our backup reader. Our newcomer greeter is Loretta M., and our second hour moderator is Kathy C. The share ID for Monday, May 11th, 2025 is 22,422. That's 22,422. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I will now ask Christina L. to read the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous.
Good morning, everyone. Christina L., recovered compulsive overeater from Florida. And here are the 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks for letting me do service. Pass.
Thank you, Christina. I will now ask Sharla W. to read the 12 traditions of OA.
Good morning, everyone. This is Sharla W. in Texas. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA Groupon never endorsed, financed, or lends the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. God bless you all. Thank you so much for allowing me to serve.
Thank you, Sharla. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes, at the end of which I will give you a gentle reminder. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 again to unmute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the chapter Working with Others on page 96, the third paragraph, beginning with, "He may be broke and homeless," and we will be reading and commenting on that one paragraph, ending with, "rather than his recovery," at the top of page 97. I will now ask Ashley F. to begin reading.
Good morning, Rick and OA family. My name is Ashley F. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater calling from Kentucky. He may be broke and homeless. If he is, you might try to help him about getting a job or give him a little financial assistance. But you should not deprive your family or creditors of money they should have. Perhaps you will want to take the man into your home for a few days. But be sure you use discretion. Be certain he will be welcomed by your family and that he is not trying to impose upon you for money, connections, or shelter. Permit that and you only harm him. You will be making it possible for him to be insincere. You may be aiding in his destruction rather than his recovery. Ooh, well... this is an important paragraph, and there are several warnings, and overall, I think what it's communicating is, what it communicates to me, what it means to me, is that I have power and responsibility for this person's recovery or destruction, and I don't mean I'm responsible for it, but I mean there's this paradox between I have no power and I'm not responsible, and I up power and try to use power. And my giving has the capacity to harm. And I have the ability, I've done it, to hold people above their healing. And oftentimes in the past in OA before I gave and did all of those things because I didn't have a program of action to show or share. And the first hint in this paragraph that things are not going to go well is in the second sentence when it says, you might try, that's a red flag for me in this book and in this way of life. If I'm trying, as in little Ashley with a little Ashley, trying, that's not a good sign. And the need for like these types of things in our membership is really great. And it's been an entertaining distraction for me, almost like a high of like, ooh, I matter and I have something, like a distraction for me. But self and me is the root of my trouble. And even in working with others, I ask God. It's the phrase that I leave this book with overall is we ask God. I ask God how and when I'm supposed to be helpful and asking, does it align with what's in this book? And honestly, this paragraph seems to say, most importantly, why? Why am I helping? I have to use program people and my higher power for clarity about that, because honestly, I'm not a great judge. I will pass, Rick, and thank you for the opportunity to kick off the meeting.
Thank you for getting us started, Ashley. Before we get our first group of names, just a reminder that although we value everyone's experience, we ask that you please limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you shared on Thursday or Friday, please hold back and let others share. Please give me your name and first initial. Who would like to share on what was read this morning?
Hi, this is
Lisa
Carolyn
B.
from New York.
Shanna C.
Carolyn from New York.
Okay, and let's see, I got Carolyn. Did I hear Lisa B?
Yes, Lisa B in South Carolina.
And then Shanna C in Tennessee?
Yes.
Okay, that's who I have so far. Who else would like to share? Got plenty of time.
This is Liz S. from Portland.
Okay, Liz, got you on there.
Virginia N.
Okay, got you, Virginia. Room for a couple more? Okay, I'll tell you what, we're going to go with this group, and then, of course, we'll get some more names. I've got Carolyn from New York, Lisa B. from South Carolina, Shanna C., Tennessee, Liz S., Oregon, Virginia N. When you introduce yourself, guys, just remember to give me your name, first initial, and the state or country you're calling from. Go ahead, Carolyn, you're up, followed by Lisa B. Go ahead, Carolyn.
Thank you so much. This is Carolyn S. from New York, a recovered compulsive overeater. Like every paragraph in this big book, we have a lot to chew on. Oh, didn't mean to say that, but you know what I mean. There's a lot to evaluate. In the time when he talked about, bringing a man into your home or giving him some money, he does say at the bottom, be sure that you use discretion. Be certain he'll be welcomed by your family and that he's not trying to impose upon you for money, connections, or shelter. Permit that and you only harm him. So it's like, obviously it's a gesture that's well-intentioned, but it's possible to get taken advantage of. And this is true. I mean, I've never personally done this kind of thing, like bring someone into my house, but it's important that we keep boundaries. And for instance, that we not let a sponsee use us as their higher power or use us for therapy. I mean, that's not our job. Our job is to be the flashlight on the path and are saying, watch out, there's a route. Just step over it. That is what I think of as my job, with a flashlight in the woods with the route. I don't want to hurt this person. They're obviously suffering already. So it tells us here, if we do permit that him to impose, you'll be making it impossible to be insincere. Now, hold on. You'll be making it possible for him to be insincere. You may be adding or aiding in his destruction rather than his recovery. So I always have to think about that. It's like with doctors. The first thing is do no harm. So if I'm working with somebody and I can tell that they're not, really doing their best work or trying very hard, you know, I'll let them know that. And then, you know, often they will just not call again, or they'll call and they'll step up their program. But it's not my job to get anyone better. I don't have that power. Only higher power does. All I can do is share my experience, strength, and hope. And I wanted to just share, if I have time, a saying here on my wall. No one changes unless they want to. Not if you beg them, not if you shame them, not if you use reason, emotion, or tough love. There's only one thing that makes someone change: their own realization that they need to do it. And there is only one time it will happen: when they decide they're ready. That's it, and I pass.
Well, thank you, Carolyn S. from New York. Up next is Lisa B., followed by Shanna C. Go ahead, Lisa.
Good morning, Rick. Good morning, everyone. Happy Monday. My name is Lisa B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I'm calling from South Carolina, and I do spell my name L-E-S-A. I'm so grateful for all of you and this deep study in the big book. This is really a challenging paragraph, but this is the day, you know, that I'm able to share live. And, you know, what comes up for me are the ninth step promises and being changed from the roots up, because my natural place is not to be generous. You know, my natural place is actually to be stingy and rigid, because it's based on fear. And I think about the transformation. That's what I'm hearing in this reading. And I hear that consistently daily, because I listen to this meeting every day. I'm just not always on live. And I hear in your messages the transformation and the giving and the generosity. And I learn through all of you, you know, how to work with others. And when I get out of myself and think of others, this brings me closer to my higher power. And I've not been ever asked to give money or shelter to another compulsive overeater. But I'm learning regularly in this program daily and in working with others that to give to others is treating that selfishness inside of me, which is the root of my problem. And making room for others, to think of others, to care for others. It's come about through this process, you know, of the 12 steps. And there's also, so there's promises in this paragraph, but there's also a warning. And it talks about that this person could be put in a position where they could be insincere. And that word really stands out for me. It's so important that I'm genuine and sincere in my own program, like not for anybody else, but I have to be sincere in my understanding of the desperation of this disease. And when I'm working with others, I don't want to give to them so much that they're not having to be sincere and genuine about their own understanding of the desperation. And, you know, in page 107 in the AA 12 and 12, under step 12, it talks about the transformation that's happened for me. And it says, he finds himself, excuse me, in possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, and unselfishness, peace of mind, and love of which he had thought himself quite incapable. What he has received is a free gift, and yet usually, at least in some small part, he has made himself ready to receive it. And I just love that, because I am grateful for the tolerance that I do have today, a little bit. I have a little bit of tolerance, a little bit of willingness to be kind and helpful. And I just have to keep surrendering over and over to my higher power and to all of you and working with others. You know, I work with others to be sponsored, and I work with others to sponsor, and I work with others to walk with you and share with you and grow with you and expose those selfish, stingy places inside of me. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Oh, perfect time. And Lisa B. from South Carolina. Thank you. All right. Up next is Shanna C., followed by Liz S. Go ahead, Shanna.
Good morning. This is Shanna C., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Tennessee. Thank you, Rick, and thanks for a wonderful meeting so far. The thing that just really pops into my head is how intensive work with other compulsive overeaters is the very thing that's going to save my butt. And I'm so grateful that I can be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet when I'm, you know, thinking of what I can do for others versus myself. And that doesn't come naturally, because, you know, my spirituality, my, you know, whatever, I am powerless over the fact that I'm not cured completely of my selfishness and self-centeredness. and fear and all the defects. It is a daily reprieve. It's not a white-knuckling thing. It's, okay, today I get to start over and ask God to direct my thinking. How can I be helpful? The reason why I'm abstinent is I'm getting the stay of execution. And the reason why I'm sober is so that other people can see the miracle happening in my life, and so that I'm given the ability to function as a sane human being in a world where a lot of people use other things to function. And I get to remain this way so that God is revealed. You know, somehow some people can come to believe that there is a power greater than themselves. And that's it. You know, and that stuff gets taken away if I'm not willing to show up and help others. And that obsession starts to come back. Believe me, I can feel it. And I don't have to even pick up the first bite when I start feeling that belly barometer inside of me going off. You know, and that mind of mine starts trying to manage the food and mind trying to manage other people. And everybody just starts getting on my nerves all the time. You know, thank God I have a way of living that makes abstinence livable. And, you know, and just all of the tools and stuff that are there, and the tools always pointing back to God, which is the source of the power that keeps me abstinent. But the tools enable me to walk life. And so, and in helping other people, that's the number one thing. And I'm reminded of Bill's story, you know, when he's laying in the hospital, you know, and he was separated from alcohol the last time, you know, the thought came there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have would have been so freely given to him. So the inspirational thought of others is what, you know, kept him going, and the thought that he may help other people. And so for me, helping others, I didn't realize for the longest time that me getting tore up about somebody else either drinking or eating or whatever was actually me being selfish. I thought it was just because I cared so much, and I do care. But at the same time, there's something in there that I expected and wanted for myself, or otherwise I wouldn't be so emotionally disturbed. It's because I can get into the outcome. And my job is to show up, share what happened with me, and the, you know, tools I'm using. If they want it, they'll do it. The desire to find God must come from within. Finding God is what keeps me abstinent. And passing it on is what keeps that flowing through me to keep me from picking up that first compulsive bite. And it gives me
a reminder.
Clarity. Thank you. You know, would leave more sanity and clarity in practicing these principles in all my affairs. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks, Rick.
Well, thank you, Shanna C. from Tennessee. Liz S., you're up next, followed by Virginia N. Go ahead, Liz.
Good morning again, Rick. This is Liz S. from Portland, Oregon. So the word that's not printed in this paragraph, but that comes into my mind with this paragraph, is enablement. And if I am enabling someone to continue in their addiction without having means for significant, I am allowing them to hurt himself or hurt herself. I have a superwoman complex. I want to be the person who sees a disaster, rushes in, you know, with cape flying probably, and cleans up the mess and makes everything okay, comforts the people who are upset. While not in program, I have a relative who has a repeating pattern of not being able to take care of herself, and refusing to go to therapy and refusing to or saying that she doesn't need a 12-step program. I have another brother in 12-step program at another fellowship, and yet another brother who's not in a fellowship. And the three of us who wanted to take care of our sister thought about pooling money so that she could seek outside help. And we couldn't agree amongst ourselves what the money, when the money would stop. I mean, you know, once you get into therapy, sometimes it's a very long commitment. But it gave me the awareness that this wasn't going to help her. And I can't understand where that awareness came from except from my higher power. I think this is a very interesting paragraph for another reason, and that is that it says you can't think in black and white terms in this world. It says you've got to use discretion.
Just
you have to understand. Thank you for the reminder. And that, with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Liz S. Morgan. Virginia N., you're up next, and we'll get some more names. Go ahead, Virginia.
Good morning. This is Virginia N. in Southwest Virginia, and I am actually living this paragraph right now because I have someone staying in my guest room from program who was homeless. So for a lot of complicated reasons, but the beginning of the month, I helped her set up a tent on a piece of property, and I thought, oh gosh, this is not a, you know, the tent wasn't that great, the whole situation wasn't that great, and the next day I was supposed to bring her a sleeping bag, and I had an extra one, and that night it poured, it rained, and the weather was supposed to rain, and I prayed to God for it not to rain because I thought that tent is not waterproof. And so the next day when I went with the sleeping bag, you know, she was washed out, and I just had to pray, and I knew that my higher power would want me to offer her a place to stay. I could not let her stay in that situation. But I have to say I was careful to make boundaries, but I also have to admit in the beginning I put stipulations. I had expectations about who she should call for help and going to meetings, and we had a rough couple of days, and I just kept praying, and all of a sudden I was like, Virginia, you're using your will, and you're trying to be her higher power, and she has her own higher power, she has her own path. And I totally released it, and it was such a feeling of relief that, oh yeah, I'm not in charge. I've given her a safe place to stay for a specific amount of time, which was 1 month, and we have a written agreement on that, and I'm helping her where I can, get to meetings, giving her rides, but I had to let go that she has her own higher power that's going to take care of her, and I truly believe that that higher power will help her. It was a big decision, but I feel like it was the right decision, and I feel like that was service that came my way that I had to offer for someone that was really in need. So, and I have to admit, I'm ready at the end of the month. I would take her to a shelter. That's what I would have to do. I'm selling my house. I can't have someone long term anyway, even if she got a job. But I know that I'll be okay about it. It would be a hard thing if she hasn't found another place. But I know that I have to have my own boundaries and take care of myself. So So thanks for letting me share what's going on that relates to this paragraph. I'll pass.
Well, thank you, Virginia Ann from Virginia. Okay. Well, the 2025 Power of the Big Book Weekend is coming up November 7th through November 9th in Newark, New Jersey. Just go to the website. Get the info. If you haven't already signed up, sign up. Get your rooms. Book your flights. Can't wait to see you there. All right. Before we continue with our second group of names, we are in the chapter Working with Others on page 96, the third paragraph, beginning with, "He may be broke and homeless." And we will be reading and commenting on that one paragraph, ending with, "rather than his recovery," on the top of page 97. And though we value everyone's experience, we ask that you please limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you shared on Thursday or Friday, please hold back and let others share. Who would like to share? Just please give me your name and first initial, and we'll get you on the share list.
Terry W.
Terry W. Okay.
Catherine L.
Okay. Was it Ashland?
Catherine A.
Wow. My ears are broken. Catherine A.
Lisa L.
Lisa L.
M as in Mary.
Okay. All right. Got you, Lisa.
John
All right.
K.
John K.
Yes.
Okay, John.
Christina L.
Got you, Christina. Yeah, we have some more room if someone would like to jump on or haven't shared in a while. This would be a perfect time. Okay, well, we'll see where we're at the end of this group. So here's who I have, and if I don't call your name and you gave your name, please let me know at the end of this. I've got Terry W., Catherine A., Lisa M., John K., and Christina L. Did I miss anybody from that first group? Okay, Terry W., you're up next, followed by Catherine A. Go ahead, Terry.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for your service, Rick. This is Terry W. from Massachusetts. And I get a lot out of this paragraph. You know, we talk about being broke and homeless and getting him a job or giving them a little financial assistance. I mean, I believe that's a real amazing gift of service. But when it talks about taking a man in the home for a few days, it talks about you may be giving them the possibility for being insincere. Now, every single situation with every person is very different. But in my personal situation, I was so sick from anorexia and bulimia that I lost my job. They were afraid I was going to fall down the stairs and they didn't have enough insurance because I was so thin. They repossessed my car. They shut off my heat in my apartment. I was getting evicted from my apartment. My boyfriend, 16 years, dumped me. I had no money. I had nothing. And, you know, now that I think back, I can remember calling my mother, asking her for like a couple of dollars to buy milk. And I was just so desperate. Now, I think the thing, if someone took me into their home, that would prevent me from reaching my bottom. And I would be manipulative. I would probably be using them and probably stealing at that point because those were my characteristics. But I think personally, if I didn't hit my very, very bottom, I never would have looked for the solution in these steps. So I feel every situation is very, very different. So if someone took me in for a few days, I would not have hit my bottom. So therefore, it would not have worked or been beneficial for me. But for others, I believe it's a gift. So thank you for letting me share. Thanks.
Thank you, Terry W. from Massachusetts. Catherine A., you're up next, followed by Lisa M. Go ahead, Catherine.
Hi, this is Catherine A. From Ontario, Canada. The thing that's standing out to me in this paragraph is the importance of honesty, you know, where it says there that you will be making it possible for him to be insincere. You may be aiding in his destruction rather than his recovery. If I'm thinking about this for myself from the point of view of the person trying to recover, I feel like, you know, looking back when I first came into the program, one of the most important things for me was to be honest, and that's continued to be very important. But there were things I didn't want to admit at the beginning. I didn't want to admit them to myself. It wasn't so much about wanting to admit them to others. You know, if I started to make my higher power or other fellow, or sorry, my sponsor or my fellows, my higher power, getting a sense that I was getting something from them that was contingent on, for instance, me behaving in a certain way or doing certain actions, that I was doing those things for them, not doing them for me or for my recovery, then I couldn't be honest. You know, when I had to surrender to that honesty for myself. And so if I, as a sponsor, am going and setting myself up as somebody else's higher power, setting up a situation where we've got a relationship, even if it's not, you know, the certain situation they describe in this paragraph, but if I'm noticing that the type of relationship that I've built with a sponsee means that they don't feel comfortable being honest, like, that's hurting their recovery more than it's hurting anything with me. And so generally I need to address that in some way. And maybe it means that it's not the right relationship there. Maybe it means that just need to have an honest conversation. So yeah, that's the importance of honesty is what's really standing out to me here. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Catherine A. from Ontario, Canada. All right, Lisa M., you're up next, followed by John K. Go ahead, Lisa.
Good morning. My name is Lisa M. from Virginia. Thanks, everybody, for your service this morning. And for me, I want to, a previous share almost said exactly what I wanted to say, but maybe add a little more. The enabler is the word that comes to my mind. And I had two brothers in this disease, not with the food, but with the drugs and alcohol. And they are both in the grave now, unfortunately. And I saw the enabling that happened with them, not necessarily in program, but in my family, and how, you know, the matriarch of my family, my mother, did not want to see them suffer, did not want to see them homeless, did not want to see them out in the street, and just bent over backwards and did everything within her power to keep them from where they ended up, to be honest. And I always have to look at myself to say, where am I enabling someone, a sponsee? Or where am I aiding in their destruction and not helping them to recover? And that's why, for me, this has to be so spirit-led or God-led. I have to follow the leading of God because, as a previous year said, every situation is so different. And what could be enabling to one person is genuine help to another. So it's not about what I want to do, sometimes in my zeal to provide service or to help someone. I am not. And that's why I always have to be so surrendered to God. And God, what do you want me to do in this situation? What does this person need from me in this situation? And it may be hands off. He may say, you know, step back and allow me to bring them to a place to give them the help that they need. Or he may say, provide there for that, you know. So it's so important to me to be in tune with God and to be in step with that and in sync with that and what he's requiring. And I miss it. I pray that God would just help me to hear him and to do what he's asking me to do in this specific situation. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Lisa M. from Virginia. Mm-hmm. All right, John K., you're up next, followed by Christina L. Go ahead, John.
This is John K. from New Mexico. One of the things you have to do on this is be very careful. I spent about 17 years in a monastery, and, you know, you can help someone who has a psychotic break or what have you pretty easily. You just get them to the hospital or whatever. But I've had experience of people we actually had to get restraining orders on, because the longer they stayed with us, the worse they got. It's just not healthy for them to be in an environment where they don't have to take care of themselves. And, you know, as much as it hurts to do that, the best thing you could do for them is, you know, throw them out, not bring them in at all. If you could do that, but at least don't let them stay very long. And I see the guy that we had to get the restraining order some years later, and he's doing fine. You know, just don't add to the problem is all when you're trying to help. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, John Kay from New Mexico. Christina L., you're up next, and we'll get some more names. Go ahead, Christina.
Good morning, Christina L., recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. And I didn't think I really had anything to share or relate to this paragraph. I've never really experienced this, but I was reminded of a time when I first came into program, and this was in my face-to-face meeting, that there was someone who, the person had shared that they, you know, didn't have money to go to buy food and that they were, you know, going to food pantries and stuff. And I did give him a gift card for a local grocery store back then, and he didn't ask for it. That was the only time I did it. It was only a one-time thing. But, you know, one of the things that I can do today, and in that spirit of, like, thinking, like, you know, there may be people like us who are having to go to food shelters to get their food, and being able to provide food that is, you know, at least free of my ingredients that I have to in their, you know, in their interest and stuff like that. But the last sentence, you may be aiding in his destruction rather than in his recovery. And I was just, I was, you know, asking God, like, how have I aided in destruction rather than in recovery with, you know, the women that I have talked to in the last month or two since recovering and taking on a sponsee and everything. And I, this is probably one of my big defects. I am so concerned about hurting someone's feelings. Like, I will not share my honest truth with someone out of that fear. And I was doing that a lot with women the last however long it was. But last week I heard a share that, like, really, really hit me, and it really hit me hard. And I've just been holding on to it ever since. And I think it was, I love you, but I hate the disease and I refuse to enable it anymore. And that I'm just, like, really holding on to. So I think I already said that, but anyways. So yeah, I guess that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share. Have a great day, everyone. And I pass.
Well, thank you, Christina L. from Florida. Okay, before we get some more names, just a reminder, if you've shared on Thursday or Friday, please hold back and let others share. Who else would like to share? And please include the state or country you're calling from when you introduce yourself. Russ M.
Michelle M.
Russ M. Michelle M.
Charla
F. Was that Charla or Charlotte?
Charla.
Okay. Gotcha, Charla.
Sarah G.
How do you spell that?
Sarah, S-A-R-A.
Oh, okay. All right. Was there someone in this group? It seems like I've missed somebody. I've got Russ M., Michelle M., Charla, and Sarah.
Kathy R.
Okay, we're going to stop there. And, yep, again, when you introduce yourself, guys, give me your name, first initial, and the state or country you're calling from. Russ M., brother, you're up. And then followed by Michelle M. Go ahead, Russ.
Morning, Rick. Russ M., recovered compulsive overeater in Pennsylvania, outside of Philly. So when I hear this, I never really did this with a sponsee, but many people have done it for me, you know, in my life, throughout my life, not even in program, you know, like enabling my behavior, giving me support to keep me happy, placating me. And I'm not blaming them. Like, look, my parents, I'm an only child. They wanted to see me do well. So they tried to make it easy for me in many different facets of life, including, you know, they didn't know that was, they knew I had a problem with food. They didn't quite understand the whole deal. But until, you know, my mom, God rest her soul, she cut me off. And that was like my security blanket. And that's when things started turning for me because I had no other option. I was desperate. And I had to look towards God. I had nobody else, not even, you know, my immediate family. Like, they weren't digging me out of this. The financial part, the emotional part, and with the food. That went on my whole life until that happened, until that boundary was set. That was, you know, I wasn't going to take any action. So that's the gist of it for me with this paragraph. And, you know, I got to be careful going forward with my sponsees because I want to be gung-ho. I want to help everybody. But sometimes, you know, I could become codependent on the sponsee and I meddle in there and I hurt them in the long run with their recovery and they suffer. And I don't want that's the gist of it. Okay. Thank you for letting me share. Appreciate you.
Well, thank you, Russ M. from Pennsylvania. Okay, Michelle M., you're up next, followed by Sharla. Go ahead, Michelle.
Good morning. This is Michelle M. from Oklahoma, recovered. And I'm really grateful to be on this meeting. My schedule's changed, and I haven't been able to get on live as much as I would like to. And it's just such a relief to hear all these voices. And I was thinking about this kind of in more of a metaphorical sense of myself. You know, I wasn't broken homeless, but I was broken and left with the consequences and elements from my destructive behavior. And you know, I come from a family of codependence and enabling, and what I know for myself today is that I had to be done. And my bottom, I mean, on the outside, it looked like I had it all. On the inside, I was dying of shame, incomprehensible demoralization, and fear. And I'm bulimic, and I was ready to lose another tooth. And I've lost a lot. And what I'm thinking about this is that now, on the flip side, being recovered, it's not my job to rob somebody of the opportunity to become an adult. And I can see where that need for approval, that deep down stuff where somehow I can be a hero, I can prove my worth, I can do X, Y, Z, you know, that self-centeredness shows itself in so many ways. And I have to really be careful of that. And I too have I've gone through a lot of these things, but I also have to recognize that I can't transmit what I haven't got. And if I'm looking for somebody who's still sick and in recovery to give me something, I'm not in the right place. And I hear too about just saying this that recovered. I'm recovered. Well, there's a lot more. You know, and I hear people, I went through the big book in 5 days and I'm sponsoring. And that might work for some people, but I don't get that. I don't get that. So I am thankful for where I've been, what I have today, and being able to freely give it, but not rob somebody of the opportunity to take responsibility and become an adult. And with that, I pass.
All right. Thank you, Michelle M. from Oklahoma. All right. Sharla, didn't get your first initial or where you're calling from. Go ahead, Sharla.
Okay, I'm Sharla F., and I'm from California. And I understand. Am I on?
You are on.
Okay. I understand. I've been listening to this program for a couple of weeks now, and I am not abstinent, okay? I am bulimic and have some major, what I love about this program is that I've learned that that it's not so much about being anorexic or being a compulsive overeater or being bulimic. We also have all these compulsive food behaviors. And so because of this particular chapter that I've been listening to, it's helped me to come to realize that I do have to be desperate enough. And I know that, like, from this one, you know, talking about enabling and stuff, there are food banks and things like that. And if somebody comes and says, well, I don't have any food, well, obviously you really do, because having these compulsive behaviors over food and even hoarding, I've just started to let myself know that I can't go to food banks because that's just enabling me, you know. And if I spend all my money on compulsive shopping for food, that's only giving me permission to binge and purge. Now, I'm being rawfully honest here, okay? And yes, I would love to have a sponsor that will hold my hand and will say, you know what, I will eat these bites with you and sit with you, like, during these feelings or go shopping so you don't, like, you know, have your food plan and do whatever. But I'm really, really grateful for being able to see how damaging compulsive food behaviors are. And the other day, somebody saw something with me without it and called me out on it in front of a whole bunch of people, and was just very, very mean. And I was embarrassed and whatever. But after I got home, I had to go home and just start praying, Lord, help me to forgive that person, because obviously that person felt the need to call me on some food behaviors that are not okay.
Gentle reminder. You
know? Yeah. So I just really, really wanted to share that on from another perspective of somebody that wants to be coming into the program, that there is a way of enabling, and there's also, I suppose, a way of helping, but setting up a boundary. So that's all I wanted to say. I am really, really grateful to be able to participate in this program at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlotte F. from California. And if you haven't already done so, you can, if you hang out for the second hour, there'll be an opportunity to call in to give your name and contact information. People can reach out to you. And then at the end of the second hour, people will be giving their names and numbers for to be sponsors. So highly recommend that and welcome.
I understand. Pat, we'll move on to someone else. Thank you so much.
So, Sarah, you're up next, followed by Kathy R.
Hi, good morning, everyone. This is Sarah G. calling from New York. So grateful to be here. Thank you, everyone, for your service. I guess I want to look at the flip side because I haven't sponsored enough. I'm not a sponsor yet. But on the flip side, like, I look at people and I see the beauty in people, but yet at the same time, it can be like, wow, look how beautiful they are, that
I don't look at myself, and I make them into a god. And I'm very, you know, I'm conscious of it, and at the same time, it's like that's the disease. Like, what am I going to get out of this person? Like, no. They are representatives of God, of what can I do to get out of the disease and to only count on God. And at that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah T. from New York, Kathy R. I'm sorry, we have run out of time. If you could please share on the second hour. Time just snuck right up on me. So thank you, everyone, who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. The share ID for today, Monday, May 12, 2025, is 22,423. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Tamara C. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, this is Tamara C., a recovered compulsive overeater in Missouri. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.